Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Congrats, Jerry. All right.
I had a crush on Glenda.
You, the Good Witch?
Yeah.
Can you blame me? Did you, what did you think of Dorothy? You kidding me? Them ruby slippers?
KKFN and KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver. From the American Financing Studios, there's never an off-season for Talking Broncos. Denver's sports station. Sports Radio 104.3. The Fan.
Denver Sports Snapshot.
Broncos finish up their last day of OTAs today. They'll start mandatory minicamp next week. Rockies beat the Reds last night in Cincinnati. Rocks remain on the road against the Reds. Tyler Anderson on the mound for Colorado. It's Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Washington will try and close out the series against the Golden Knights in Las Vegas.
Snapshot presented by Shomp BMW. One price, one person, 1 hour.
Question Mark with Mark Schlereth is brought to you by Brakes Plus.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag Question Mark on social media and the text line. And now, it's time for Question Mark.
Okay, here's one for you from John on the RomoSlot.com text line, 303-713-1043. Mark, why do you continue to defend Emmanuel Sanders? Can't you recognize that he is a selfish... I can't say that, John.
A selfish what?
Selfish... he's a selfish Richard Nine, but put a P in front of it.
Okay.
Well, not just a P, because you got to, like, take the D off and...
Mm-hmm. I got you. I got you.
That was very nice.
Rick with a P, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Here's the deal.
But before you answer, here's Emmanuel Sanders yesterday.
I do. If the ball's coming there. If the ball's not coming there, I don't want to be there. Point blank, period.
Yeah.
About the idea of playing in the slot.
Yeah, if the ball's coming to him, he'll play in the slot. If not, he's not going to go there. Is he selfish? Sure. Is just about every receiver in football selfish? Yeah. They all want to produce. They all want to have their number called. They all want to have 100 catches. You know, that's what they want to do. And I want a guy that's going to produce as well. I guess the issue is if you start to mope and sulk and then complain, if... You know, you have a couple of games where you're not getting the ball, where you're not, producing. But I think it's, for whatever reason, it's endemic of the position. At some point, when this league decided to make it a passing league and to loosen up all the defensive, you know, to make all the defensive, like what you used to be able to do and make defense almost impossible to play. And now it used to be that you could hit a guy over the middle and that if you went over the middle, I mean, there was only a certain breed that would do it because you're going to get lit up. Now you can't hit anybody and you can't press anybody and you can't hand fight with anybody. And, you know, you get the 5-yard chuck rule and, you know, on and on and on it goes. I just think at that point, because the rules all changed to enhance the passing game, then all the receivers thought that, oh, I am important. Look, they've changed the rules for me, you know, and it's become this situation where that position tends to have per capita the most divas on the planet in that position.
And aren't there some positions in sports that you have no problem with the guy being selfish? I mean, look, I used to, way back when I first started out in this business, I covered a lot of Boston Red Sox game when Wade Boggs was playing.
Yeah.
And the joke was that Wade Boggs would be calculating his average as he'd be running down the baseline.
Mm-hmm.
That's how consumed he was with his batting average. Who cares? I mean, as long as he's slapping doubles off the wall,
right?
Who cares, right? The team benefits. If Emmanuel Sanders wants the football, and he's getting the football and he's producing when the football is thrown to him, what's the problem?
Right. I think the issue is I want my guys to want to produce. I want them to want the ball. I want them to score touchdowns. I want them to have big games. I want all that stuff for them. I think the problem is when your production is more important than your team and you have that kind of attitude, because that's when you can become a problem. And so, you know, it's why T.O. is a Hall of Famer but had to bounce from team to team to team. And it's not that Jerry Rice didn't want the ball. Jerry Rice, of course, wanted the ball. But are you still a good teammate? Are you still... Rod Smith had a bazillion catches, one of the best teammates I've ever been around. You know, if he didn't have it... I mean, he wanted to do whatever he needed to do to help us win.
Yeah, but Rod and Ed were the outliers.
Right.
Come on, those were...
I understand that.
That was a rare...
I understand that.
Rare case.
But you can still want the ball and be selfish in that you want the ball and you want to produce and still be a good dude and a good teammate. Like, I got to spend some time around Julio Jones. You want to talk about a great guy, great competitor, certainly wants the ball, but he's not completely, like, the guys on the team like him. He's fun, you know, and he's a competitor. And he's not, if he gets a game where he doesn't get the ball a bunch, he's not going to sit and pout and complain about it. He's going to keep going out and working. And so, you know, I think you can still be a superstar in this league and still be...
Wait a minute, hold on a second. Now, all right, you had me until you started extolling the virtues of Julio Jones. Julio Jones... These are the amount of targets he's had over the last 4 years. Targets.
Right.
Meaning the ball is coming his way. Targets. 149, 129, uh-huh. 164. And in 2015, he was targeted 204 yeah. times. Yeah. Of course he's a good teammate.
Okay, with that said, Julio Jones.
Let's have a season in which he gets targeted maybe 75 times over the course of 16 games, and check back with me.
Okay, but Julio Jones is, like, you're comparing Emmanuel Sanders to Julio Jones. That's like comparing, you know, me to John Hanna.
Yeah,
like, Julio Jones is a freak show.
Yeah, but I'm saying these guys, they're receivers. They are only happy if they're getting the ball thrown to them. And if they're not... Even if the team's doing well, they're going to grumble about it. Privately, you hope.
Well.
It's how these guys define themselves.
Right. Again, it's part of the position. And I think the overinflated opinion of oneself and one's importance to the team has really grown exponentially over the years because of the way the NFL calls games. And their desire to produce points. And that's why they've changed the rules. And I think with the rule changes came, you know, this kind of a diva nature. And it started, when did it start? It started, gosh.
When did it start?
Really?
When did the receivers become divas?
When they stopped allowing chucks down the field.
But who were the first couple? Was it Keyshawn Johnson? I mean...
Just throw me a damn ball right? In 96. He released a book as a rookie, right? In 96 or something.
So guys like him, Randy Moss, you know, sort of cultivating the image that...
Right.
I think it was guys like them because, you know, Jerry Rice was always, you know, there was never a sense that he was... A prima donna about it.
Maybe it was even back to his day, but because there was no social media and there was no coverage like that, maybe you just didn't realize it.
But again, a guy who didn't have to worry about getting the ball thrown to him.
Well, you're not going to have to worry about getting the ball thrown to you when you're big and physical and you're always open. Ball's coming your way. And there's a lot of plays that are designed for you. I get that.
By the way, isn't Julio Jones kind of holding out for a new contract?
Is he? I like to call him Julio. I don't know why.
Yeah, he says he's not attending OTAs until he gets a new deal.
Selfish.
Hmm.
Hey, everything I said good about Julio Jones, scratch it. Do me a favor, scratch it. Hey, Ben, will you hit me the rewind button? I know you're busy back there, but just hit me the rewind button.
Uh-huh.
Julio Jones, real turd. There we go. Solved that, didn't we?
Would people be, I don't know if shock's the right word, but would they be disappointed at how selfish the typical pro athlete is, how aware the typical pro athlete is of their numbers, their stats, how their stats are in comparison to other guys, what their contract is in comparison to other guys? Would the overall level of selfishness surprise a lot of people?
And I don't, probably yes, but I don't think it should, because I think in your workplace, whatever your workplace happens to be, you're keeping score. What does so-and-so get paid? What do I get paid? What does that guy get paid? What does he do? What do I do? What does she do? Do I deserve more? I do more work than that person. Why is that person getting what they're getting? Doesn't that go on? Goes on in the broadcasting world. I know that. I know it goes on all the time. Like, are you kidding me? They paid that guy that?
Right.
And that happens all the time.
Okay.
So, I mean, like, it's always funny to me because, no, inevitably, whatever you see, you know, like with the whole White House thing that went down with the Philadelphia Eagles, okay? And, you know, you get it out on Twitter, right? And you hear all the people disrespect this and disrespect that. And then you see that, I think Kevin Durant this year alone, now I know he's not part of the protest, but we always talk about these athletes. I think he donated $14 million this year alone to educational causes. LeBron James's deal and his foundation, $41 million. And then you look at guys like Chris Long donating over, you know, several million.
Donated his salary.
His entire salary. You know, Malcolm Jenkins being on the Hill and trying to create change for prison reform. And, you know, and just there's a lot of guys that are doing a lot of good in the communities all over the nation. And we just brush that aside. We sweep it in the corner to focus on something that's not even legit. Lack of patriotism. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous when you think about it, but it is kind of our society. You know, we just look at what we want to look at. And I think if you're honest, it's easy to look at players and say, wow, they make so much money, for crying out, and be mad at, you know, at the entertainment business. And that's ultimately what this is. It's always funny to me that we're pissed at players that make a lot of money, but an actor makes $20 million a film and you don't even think about it. And how many of those guys have their own political agendas and everything else? But, oh, that's fine. They're actors. But, you know, our athletes, oh, heaven forbid that they get involved in I just want you to catch the ball and score touchdowns and don't be a human. And then you're okay with it. And I'm okay with you in that. I mean, there is a standard that we hold athletes to that we don't hold Hollywood to. Would you agree with that?
Whether it's stay in your lane, dribble the basketball, and just dribble the basketball, don't do anything else. Right. Or in this case, we expect or think that they're all consummate teammates.
Right.
And that if you're not, then you need to be flogged for it. You know, wear the public scarlet letter because you come out and you're honest about saying, yeah, I want the ball thrown to me.
Right.
Look, if I'm Emmanuel Sanders, And I'm a Bronco fan, and I've watched Emmanuel Sanders here. Here's what I know.
Mm-hmm.
If Emmanuel Sanders is getting the ball thrown to him, there is a very good chance, A, he'll catch it,
right,
and B, he'll do something with it after he catches it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also pretty confident that if the ball is thrown towards Emmanuel Sanders, he will give max effort to try to make that catch.
Correct.
So if that is all being done, how is that selfish that he wants the ball?
Right.
I get it. You want everybody to, you know, be Tim Tebow and say and do all the right things. You want all your guys to be mm-hmm. perfect teammates. All I'm saying is I think you'd be surprised at how many guys are selfish and how many guys are aware of their numbers.
Right.
And how many guys who, even after a victory, are not happy with the fact that they didn't have that many catches, that many touches, that many shots, went 0 for 4, all that.
And I think that you look at people that are in competitive jobs or in a competitive market that have worked their butts off, that have focused, you know, solely on being the best that they can be. I just think you develop a certain amount of selfishness, a certain amount of, you know, I got to take care of me aspect. I mean, you think about just playing in general, how focused you are on you. And it's part of the deal. You know, I mean, God bless my wife, but when football season started, I was like, hey, you're kind of on your own, because I mean, it's rehab, it's ice. I would come home every night. We'd sit down, we'd have dinner together as a family. I was up in bed packed in ice by 7:30 every night, every single night. Honey, you got to shut down the house. Then I'm out of bed, you know, at 4:45 in the morning, heading to the facility to get 2 hours of treatment before I start studying film at 7. I mean, I was completely dialed in and locked in, and my wife knew that that's what I was doing. And you're kind of on your own. Like, you raise a family for, and then you come back.
See you later.
Yeah, when you come back for the season, then you're like, why the hell are we doing it that way? This should be done over here, and what's this, you know? You're in charge, and everybody's like, hey,
who's
shut up.
Who's been mowing my lawn?
Right. You show up, and everybody looks at you like, hey, dude, you know, pump the brakes. You don't really live here. So, you go, you know, kind of ease yourself back into the program. Figure out what we're doing, and then jump on board. So, but it's kind of how it works. So you're almost bred to a certain degree to be selfish. You think about it. Every day you walk in and, you know, Monday they hand you a week's itinerary. They just, here you go. And you got your whole, okay, I got to be here. You know, it's like taken care of for you. So it breeds a certain amount of selfishness. And especially when you've been enabled. I mean, come on, today's athlete? I mean, they're recruiting kids and offering scholarships in the 7th grade to kids. Like Alabama's of the world. Hey, one of the great things I ever heard was a buddy of mine that coached at Alabama for a while, talking about the de-recruiting process. So they go about recruiting you through high school and everything else, and how you're going to be the greatest thing ever, and how you're going to help them win multiple national championships, and how they've already got a starting role for you, and this, that, and the other, and you know, and they make it sound so great, so great. And then they get you on campus, they get you to sign, and they start the de-recruiting process. You're a piece of crap, you got to start working harder, you got to compete for your job, you know what, this is Alabama and there are no guarantees. Like, there is this whole, like, you've been enabled and been told how great you were since the time you were in the 6th grade. And now all of a sudden, you got to come and compete for a job, and we got to make sure that you accept coaching. And so now we just got to be jerks and de-recruit you, try to get some of that diva out of you. So, I think part of the kind of the selfish nature of today's athlete, if you will, and they're not all this way, but a lot of them are, is because that's the way they've been groomed to mm-hmm. be that. You're the greatest thing ever. And that's all they've been told.
I think the backlash that comes against athletes, and maybe it's even celebrities that people get they're upset. They get upset over what they perceive to be a selfish attitude or a holier than thou attitude. You know, who are you to be up there and accepting an Oscar award and telling me how the world should be run? Is the idea of to me, it's always been this way. Covering sports for over 30 years has always been this way. With the lifestyle that these folks have been afforded, the money that they've made, the average person out there hates it. And not hates it, but there's a sense of, look, man, you won the lottery. Hand of God came down and touched you.
Right.
You should be grateful to it. You should be grateful for
right.
it. You should be, because I would kill to be in your position. Stan, I'm out there. I'm grinding every single day. Here you are. You're living the life. You're out there catching footballs for a living, and you're not happy if the ball's not coming your way.
Right.
Please, I don't want to hear it.
Right.
I think that's what it all boils down to. I think it's always been that
right.
way. It's why whenever there is a contract dispute, why do fans always take the side of the right. team?
I get it.
Because you ungrateful SOB, you
right.
aren't happy with this yeah. amount of money and you want this. Try getting by on $40,000 a year. You know, I mean,
yeah.
it's real. I'm not discounting what folks right. think. I'm just saying it's out there, and it's always been
right.
out there. It'll always be out there, and that's why you get this kind of backlash to a person who, if you switch places with him and you lived his life, and you played his sport, you know what? You probably don't want to admit this, but you'd probably end up thinking the same way.
I guess the issue that I have is everybody likes to say, like, oh, you know, like, hand of God, lottery, if I had that talent, I. And I'm like, no, you wouldn't, because you have no idea what it takes. You have no idea the sacrifices. My granddaughter just sent my son the most amazing message. I've got the video. I'll show it to you. Maybe I'll post it on Instagram. And you think about, what you've gone through. Drew Goodman on the broadcast last night talked about Daniel. And, first round draft choice, goes right to the big leagues. Spends 3 years in the bigs, or 4 years in the big leagues, gets hurt. Has multiple injuries, and this has been this journey now for 5 years where, my son is in, it's in Arkansas, like Little Rock, Arkansas, and Jacksonville, Florida. And I mean, he's been bouncing around little towns, Manchester, New Hampshire, and like these
Fisher Cats.
Right, the Fisher Cats, and trying to get it back and trying to figure it out. And missing, time with his daughters, and you make a bunch of sacrifices that the average person isn't willing to make, Mike. And it's not only physical, it's mental, it's everything else. And people just take that for granted. I can't tell you how many times people stop me and you don't know who I am, but see that I'm a bigger guy, and be like, hey, did you play football? And I don't ever say, yeah, I played for the Broncos. I just go, yeah, I played a little bit. Did you play in college? Yeah, I played in college. Oh, great. That's usually satisfy them. And then usually be like, I said in high school I was going to the pros, but then I tore up this knee. Otherwise, I'd be, no, you wouldn't have. You wouldn't have. Because you don't have the balls to do it. And that's reality, but people don't like to they just see the money and they don't see the sacrifice. They don't see the physical sacrifice. They don't see the mental sacrifice. Most people, the reason that you can't make it is you're not mentally tough enough. That's the reality of professional sports. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear it, but it's just flat out the truth.
So wait a minute. You're telling me if somebody walks up to you and says, oh, you must have played football, and they don't know you who you are, and you don't respond like, slap them and go, what do you mean you don't know who I am?
No, not at all.
You don't know who I am?
You know what I get a lot?
I'm kind of a big deal.
I get a lot of...
Heathen!
Yes. I recognize you from somewhere. Like, I get that a lot. I have that face that everybody recognizes. Or, you look a lot like Mark Schlereth.
Oh.
I get that all the time. The guy must be devastatingly handsome. That's what I say.
You know where I think most people, they're like, I think I know you. Where do I know you from? Where have I seen you before?
You are. I was beginning to give up on you.
It's great to see you, man.
It's great to see you, Neil. And it took me a while to get here from the airport. I guess small town transportation. So too easy. This is Springfield.
This is it.
It's only the 65-year-old blue hairs that go, hey,
I know you from book about a small town.
Hi, Sonny. I know you from somewhere.
I hate you.
It's been a while since we played that.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's just there.
Too easy.
It's just a hanging John Gray curveball that I just have to hit out of the park. Oh, so good. So good. All right. Justin Simmons says, don't worry. This is still very much alive. What is it? We'll tell you next. Always enjoy listening to Justin Simmons. Very articulate young man. Boston College Eagle. Always enjoy his take on stuff and what he had to say yesterday about, don't worry. The no-fly zone is still very much in vogue.
Well, I mean, obviously, Akeem and TJ were huge catalysts, a part of the no-fly zone, and obviously that Super Bowl run. And, you know, going back-to-back and, you know, number one passing defense, I mean, there's no replacing someone like TJ and Akeem. But Chris, Roby, and Stu were also there, you know, a part of that run. They know what standard that is to uphold as far as a no-fly zone goes. So, obviously, there's been talks about, you know, with TJ and Lee being gone, about, you know, the no-fly zone kind of disbanding and it being gone. And, you know, I'm not here to say it's here or it's left, but I know the standard of the no-fly zone is staying, because that's we expect nothing less than that standard that they have set. So you call it what you want, you know, no-fly zone 2.0, no-fly zone, or call it something totally different, but that standard, that mindset still stays the same.
What is that standard? When you think about the no-fly zone at its peak, what was it? And what is it that they're trying to uphold?
Oh, I think their standard is the best secondary in football.
Yeah, but how? How did it become the best secondary in football?
Well, they were consistently the best in the league as far as eliminating passing production from their opponents.
Okay.
Every single year.
How? How'd they do it? What was it about the way they played, the style, the mindset, the attitude, the makeup of the kind of athletes they had back there, physically and emotionally?
I think the biggest thing was,
I'm trying to get you to dig.
From a preparation standpoint, they were as prepared mentally as any football team in the National Football League. And then on top of that, they were asked to do something that most teams are scared to death of. Most teams are scared because they don't believe they have the talent to line up and say, come get some. And the Broncos would line up in man 90% of the time under Wade Phillips and say, come get a taste. And we'll roll down a safety and we'll have TJ Ward being one of our top sackers and we don't care. Come get a taste. Man-to-man on the outside with your best receiver, come get a taste. In the slot, lined up with Chris Harris Jr. against best slot receivers in football, come get a taste. Our third corner on your second receiver, come get a taste. That's who they were. And that's what they've done, and that's the standard they've set. Maybe they could change the name from the no-fly zone to the come get a taste.
Oh, man, I can see the poster. Can you see it? Around young Bronco fans' bedrooms, poster of all these guys in the secondary, and across the top it says, come get a taste.
Man to man, come get a taste. Mano y mano.
Still wouldn't replace my Farrah Fawcett poster, but... Oh. Could make a run at it.
That was a good poster.
Ooh, you know the one I'm talking about.
Oh, yes, I do. poster. Probably taken in November.
What?
The shot, the picture was probably taken in November.
Why?
It was cold.
Oh, jeez, Louise. How do I walk into something like that? Shame on me. I can't hardly breathe.
Such a child. 12. I have every
God,
day.
God, I hope your wife is just listening day, right there. That'll get
every day I have to come through the house and have her just shake her head. You are embarrassing.
Oh, I'm like November. What? And then dummy. I'm only enabling you when I say ask questions like that. Should have known better. Come on, Ben. You got to be my fail-safe there.
How about new?
Okay, so that's the mindset of the no-fly zone. No TJ Ward.
Mm-hmm.
No Aqib Talib. Darian Stewart, a few more years along. Still got Chris Harris Jr. For what they have now, Bradley Roby, Justin Simmons, Sua Cravens, Will Parks, some of the draft guys. Do you still see the potential for that kind of standard, that kind of message? And I guess maybe most importantly, did you see enough from Joe Woods last year and anticipate that he's going to continue to challenge these guys like Wade Phillips did and trust these guys like Wade Phillips did?
I think that may be one of the bigger factors, Mike, is that Joe Woods in his second year is going to be that much better. That much better understanding of where he can challenge these guys, who he can challenge, when he can blitz, when he should lay back, you know, when he should change coverage and all of a sudden play some zone stuff. You know, I think those things, he'll have a much better understanding of calling the defense and a much better understanding of how to create the one-on-ones that will, you know, free you up to make plays in the back end. So I think all those things, yes, completely think that he'll be so much better and that will help them. But again, it's going to be one of those situations where you've got to have a couple of these guys that develop and fall into that philosophical, you know, aggression. You can't be afraid. The thing about playing DB, especially in that, is if you do get beat, and you will get beat, it's, you know, it's part of the deal. You got to know that, hey, that's going to happen occasionally. They pay those other guys, too. If we're going to play this aggressive, every now and again, you're going to give up a play.
It does help, though, to indoctrinate new guys into a culture of what you've been when they come in and that's all they know.
Right.
So when a Justin Simmons, when a Will Parks, when a Bradley Roby come in, all they know is what the no-fly zone has been.
Right.
So how much easier does it make to keep it going when that's all these guys know?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one thing if you're saying, okay, you know, like Sua Cravens, for example. All right, maybe, I don't know, what you tell me what kind of defense Washington played. But, you know, if all of a sudden, you know, Washington was this lot of zone, a lot of bend but don't break, and now you're asking him to come in and be, adopt, and absorb the ways of the no-fly zone, you can see how it might be a struggle for him.
Right, but I think Sua Cravens is going to be a guy that comes in here and is asked to play, you know, a nickel linebacker type of thing and play that coverage situation where you're locked up man-to-man on a tight end or man-to-man on a running back who splits outside the numbers. So I think you've got a role, again, in this ever-evolving defense where it's, quote-unquote, positionless. I think you'll have a role kind of as a nickel safety linebacker, you know, hybrid type guy.
You know, it's a testament to your laugh that Somebody said on the text line, is it just me or does Stink's laugh sound like Muttley from Hanna-Barbera? And they didn't realize that we actually were playing Muttley.
Yeah.
But people thought it was you.
That's not me. Because
when
I really amuse myself, I get to the point where I'm like, that's when I'm really, I think I'm hilarious.
Yes.
Right.
When you think you are your funniest.
Yes.
Is when that kind of wheezing laugh comes out.
Yes.
It's good. It's good.
That's so awesome. That's so awesome. We are going to have a huge crowd at Sports Column tonight. I will be right in the middle of it. We'll tell you what it's all about next. Big night tonight. Huge. Can't wait. Sports Column.
I know.
19th and Blake, right down by the ballpark. And cordially invite all of you.
Right.
To show up for the Corona Fan Dream Job auditions.
I hope you have like 200. What's the most fans? What's the most people that have auditioned for the Dream Job?
I believe we've had upwards of 45 or so.
So.
And we get to all of you. So we will get to all of you.
I think we should pack this thing with 100, 150 people. That would be so cool for you. You know, just
meet a lot of great people.
You meet a lot of great people.
Hear a lot of great hot takes.
Right.
Some talent, some undiscovered
diamond
in the rough talent. Sure.
The fact that you could kind of mold them, you know, be the mentor.
Ooh.
Right.
Like their sensei.
Right.
I'll be their Miyagi.
Exactly. You can give them some type of wax on, you know, some little nugget that they take with them for the rest of their lives. And they're like, they're going to one day. One of these guys is going to be a big-time show host, you know, or one of these gals. And they're going to go, you know, I really have to – they're going to be accepting an award.
Mm-hmm.
I really have to give credit to Mike Evans.
Yeah.
And people are going to go, who? Mike Evans.
It's like when I watch Klatt. Huh? It's like when I watch Klatt. You know, right. I'm like, made him.
Right. He's probably never given me credit either.
No.
Like, how did Mike Evans, the receiver from Tampa, have such an impact on this person? No. Not that Mike Evans. The guy with the huge head, wispy hair, mom jeans.
Oh, I got a giant
that's
head.
That's right. Mike Evans. Okay, yeah. How'd it go? And then, you know, they basically say, well, I was doing this dream job that he cordially invited me to. And next thing you know, I'm giving a hot take, and then I got a spot on 104.3 The Fan.
There you go. Well, it's going on tonight, Sports Column in Lodo, today at 6 o'clock. And come prepared with a 3-minute topic that you're passionate about, that you're informed about, that you're ready to just dazzle us with. And you and I, we'll get a chance for about 60 seconds to kind of go over it real quick. I'll be like, all right, what are you going to come at me with? Okay, all right, how about this? How about that? And okay. Then boom.
Then you're off and running.
So come on by. And for more information, go to 1043thefan.com. By the way, right by the ballpark that I wish the Rockies would never return to. Can they just stay in Cincinnati?
What would their record be if they stayed? Could they win more games than any team in Major League history?
Yeah, I think they'd win like 120. Seriously, they seem so comfortable right there.
Yeah.
Talk about a team that does not want to leave that place. They just sort of like, this is great.
Two biggest takeaways for me yesterday. John Gray didn't pitch well, didn't pitch great. He was average, but in some pressure-packed situations, he didn't implode. He had a couple of situations where he could have imploded. He went five, he gave up 3 runs. Not great, but was good enough. And then the bullpen went 4 scoreless innings. So those are two really...
Not a Brian Shaw sighting to be found.
Well, we're working on his stuff right now.
That's right.
Yeah.
Gave him a mental health day.
Yes. They keep trying to run him out there like, hey, we're going to... This is going to... At some point, you got to be like... What are we up? 11-2? Yeah. Is that enough?
He's got a new nickname in Rockies coaching circles. It's called low leverage. low leverage positions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, but they need him to
low
find,
traffic.
They need him to find his stuff. I mean, they're going to need, obviously they need Ottavino back healthy, but they're going to need him to find his stuff. They're going to need Brian Shaw to figure it out. So you're going to have to give him, as you mentioned, you're going to have to give him those low leverage situations and get him back out there and try to give him maybe the best thing to do, reverse psychology, put him in a tight game. Say, we're counting on you. Don't screw it up.
Tied for first place. It's back remarkable.
In
back in the tie.
I'm going to a Friday night game here.
Against Arizona?
Against the D-backs, yeah.
Do you think it's going to be this way all season long with this division, where it's just like each team just knocks each other?
Yeah.
Look, you got the Padres. Padres have won 7 of the last 10. They're only 4.5 games out of first place. It goes Arizona, Rockies tied, San Francisco a game and a half back, Dodgers 2 back, San Diego 4.5.
It is amazing, right?
Does anybody burst free?
Is anybody going to do you feel like – I don't feel like anybody can run away with this division.
Even the Dodgers?
Now, if the Dodgers get Kershaw back healthy, but even so, like Goldschmidt has just been terrible. Like Goldschmidt's one of the best baseball players in all of baseball. He's been horrible for about the last month. He's scuffling. So is anybody going to put it all together and just take just sprint and go like, you know, go on a run where they win 18 to 20,
right,
or, you
right.
know, or, you know, in a 30 game period, they win 20 out of 30 and just, you know, and just overwhelm the division, or 22 out of 30, something like that. I just don't know that anybody's going to take a run like that, Mike.
You got to run out and get your new Nuggets gear today?
Yes, I am. I cannot wait. Cannot wait for my Nuggets.
See, this is
a lot of tech to test determined. That was a lot.
This is, first of all, is it almost like a desperate cry for help when you think that your release of your new uniforms and logos is worth being released on during the NBA Finals?
Yeah, it doesn't look. I think it looks bad. I think it's a bad look for
you know. It's like, well,
hey, look at
us. Can't go to the playoffs. Among the league's worst in attendance, but hey, new uniforms.
Right.
You know, it's God, I hate to saddle them with this, but it's like the same feeling I had when I first heard about the party deck.
Right.
You know? Hey, mm-hmm. Look. Pay no attention to what's going on in the field. Look at our party deck.
Right.
Pay no attention to the fact that we can't make the playoffs. Look at our new threats.
That is kind of sad.
I don't know.
You know what it? You know what it's like. All right, I'm just going to go ahead and lay it out there. It's like the muscle pig guy who's on a seventh cycle that rolls to the mall in a tank top, and he's all tanned, and he's got jeans on because he hasn't done legs in 3 years, but he upstairs he's yoked. Come look how good I look, people. And it looks like, I mean, he looks like an upside down turkey. He's going to fall over at any minute. Those little tiny pins he's on, right? Those itsy bitsy pins. I kind of look like that, but I'm not walking around in a tank top. And I've got a reason I look like that. Because I do have itsy bitsy pins.
You do have turkey legs.
Yeah. Little tiny wood. That's what it sounds like when I run. My little skinny legs. Here I come.
And on that note, we're done. Not a moment too soon. All right, we're ready to turn things over to Pritch and Cecil. And I'm curious.
Yeah.
I got to hear from Pritch. About this whole Emmanuel Sanders thing, and you know, is it such a big deal if a receiver is selfish? Is it really that big of a deal? Don't we want receivers to be selfish? Don't we want Emmanuel Sanders to want the damn ball? They're coming your way next.